Today's guest is Manuel Acuna Brito, co-founder of Good Tech Lab and now ClimateScape. Joining us from France to chat about using technology to fight climate change, how to incentivize businesses and startups to be sustainable, as well as challenges in turning research into real impact. Enjoy the podcast and please subscribe and share. What is the question or questions that you would like to be asked that perhaps the angle or perhaps the topic or what's most important to you? What do you want to be asked?
What am I most passionate about? And for that, I'll probably answer tackling big global problems and more specifically climate change and social inequalities. So making something possible to actually make a dent on those two big and intertwined issues is definitely something that I aim for. So for the context, I'm Brazilian. I ended up co-founding a Good Tech Lab about 5 years ago. And over 5 years, we did a lot of things, but mostly, especially in the two first years of the company, we developed a very long research. We interviewed people in 30 different countries to understand how they see technology as an interesting leverage point to tackle the sustainable development goals of the United Nations. And after that, again, a bunch of things happened, including some consulting activities for foundations and large corporations that wanted to understand how they could use technology to their work. Finally, I ended up now co-founding a new organization with Brendan called ClimateScape that I'll be happy to talk more about if you want.
We'll definitely get to the ClimateScape, which is a cool name, by the way. Was there something that surprised you in the first research, in the first big report, like something that you would not expect?
Probably what impressed me the most was the excitement of so many people around the topic of technology and how many different ways you could actually use it for the purpose of achieving the SDGs. Obviously, like technology in itself, it's not the only tool at hand. Technology can actually be a big help. And discovering how like so many different initiatives from drones that enable large-scale reforestation to, new types of materials being developed with biotech and bioengineering, like generation of energy through small grid and local solar panels, empowering, you know, smallholder farmers to make their food crops actually last longer and things like that. Like there were so many amazing things that we saw along the journey. And I guess what surprised me the most was to see how diverse actually those solutions could be. Maybe something that I was also a bit surprised about were the risks that would come attached to the technology. It's becoming more and more common actually to see technology as being both very positive potential solution for the problems, but it comes along with some big, big challenges. And though I say that there is a lot of diversity in the terms of like the spectrum of solutions that we could use through technology, there is still a big lack of diversity behind the scenes in technology. Like, who are the people developing them? We have a lot of people who are coming from the same backgrounds and, you know, origins and have the same gender, and there's still some changes that needs to be done in that spectrum.
During your interviews, have you encountered someone who would be more skeptical or more conservative, you know, saying that we first need to make sure that the economy is ready for that, you know, those usual arguments? Have you encountered someone like that, or basically you felt that everyone is on the same boat?
No, absolutely. There were many investors who were still skeptical in the beginning, but it's funny to see, like, there, when we started that research about 5 years ago, many things have already changed. And even some of those people with whom we spoke a couple of years ago are now either opening their own impact investing funds or, you know, changing their thesis a little bit to include either ESG criteria to say the minimum, but sometimes even really focusing specifically on climate.
Would it be possible for you to, you know, list maybe three or five technologies or approaches that sort of cut it through the interviews and through your research? Would it be possible to list some technologies that really stand out as prominent ways to tackle the climate change issue?
So when we're talking about climate tech, I think it's important to understand that there are basically three main things that would fit under that umbrella. First one, it's decarbonization. So all the technologies that are allowing us to reduce current greenhouse gas emissions, anything related, for instance, to clean energy, generation or energy storage from traditional renewable energies like solar panels and or wind power to batteries and energy storage like green hydrogen and so on, to just like improving efficiency as well of certain like current processes, also clean transportation, like things like that. So that's the bulk of decarbonization. Then there's a second thing, which is about carbon removal. And for that, you'd have both natural approaches, so natural carbon sinks like forests or oceans, as well as engineered solutions that would go like the direct air capture that need to be, you know, combined with long-term storage of the CO2 that is captured, or biochar, which is the creation, like pyrolysis of biomass that can be then used as soil amendment. So that's also a very interesting tech. Then you'd see a third bulk, which is everything related to climate adaptation. So it's in a way, how can we adapt to a world that will kind of inevitably be warmer than the one that we are currently living on? And things that would empower, for instance, smallholder farmers in the global south, even just like technologies, like applications that allow them to scan their crops and understand which are the diseases that might be consuming their production, and understanding through, for instance, peer-to-peer learning through those apps, how to actually tackle those diseases. So things like that could be super powerful as well and empowering, as well as like generally technology for water filtering, solar irrigation, and many more.
What are your experiences with translating the findings, which are very inspiring, translating them into, you know, at least political debate or societal debate, but more importantly, into impact? What is, you know, what are your experiences? What are the biggest obstacles? What would be the biggest successes? Speaking from my perspective as a researcher, when I've done some research, for example, for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we would send it to the ministry and it would end up in a box and no one would really care about it for the next 10 years and then and never ever after. So, you know, my question is how, you know, what were your obstacles when you were trying to translate your research results into some sort of an impact, either be it a political or societal debate or an actual policy change?
We actually wrote things that we found were important to be said, and that it could help people generally, like the entire ecosystem around technology and impact, to converge, to understand each other, and to see how they could empower their activities and their roles. I haven't necessarily exchanged with a specific agency afterward to understand how they implemented our recommendations. That being said, both in terms of the supporters, like the funders of the report, because we did have some amazing sponsors that supported us along the journey, including the French Agency for Energy and Sustainable Development here. So there were, I guess, a lot of understandings of what could be done, and somehow a way to kind of create a framework for them to explore more the possibilities of technology. So some of the players that supported us or with whom we exchanged were more coming from the social sector, and they didn't really understand so much about the technology side. And what they wanted to learn is how technology could be useful for them. And some other players were more like coming from larger industries or, you know, technological sectors. And what they wanted to understand was how what they were doing could actually create a positive impact in the society instead of, you know, being harmful. So in that sense, I think the report was helpful, and the work that we did as a follow-up, like some consulting activity that we did as a follow-up for this piece, had also worked in that direction. And ultimately, the next step for us, both the team for GoTech Lab is all like taking the next step now into going kind of more hands-on approach. My co-founder is launching something new also related to working directly with startups, and on my end, what I'm doing is also a product that would hopefully help many investors and players in this ecosystem, including potentially in the future some policymakers as well, to better understand how to use their economical resources to support innovation that actually matters and that would actually have a positive impact on the planet.
Thank you. This is really good to hear, because often we hear that somebody creates a really fascinating and in-depth report or a product, but then the follow-up, the impact isn't as seen because the the industries that should be looking at it are not necessarily as interested, or it doesn't get onto their table. How do you find that you can have success in this, and again, I'll use the word that Mikhail used, translating, let's say, the report or the product that you're working on now, or what your colleague is working on for a Good Tech Lab, as you mentioned just now? How does it become a successful endeavor? So to bring it to the governmental sectors or bring it to the industry sectors so that what you have done has the application that you intended. The whole purpose of the thing is to fight climate change. So how do you then see it through that it has the correct impact and it is seen by those sectors?
Obviously, it's always good to understand that could help some other people at least have a personal framework to understanding better the issues with technology as well as the opportunities within the Sustainable Development Goals. So that's one. And for what I'm currently doing with ClimateScape, I guess, as I was saying before, the goal for us is really to create a data-powered market intelligence platform that will support people making better decisions in how they invest and how they support startups in the climate tech space. So in a certain way, we are not, at least for the beginning, targeting policymakers. We are more focused on the private sector and industry, and specifically with investors and early stage investors that are supporting innovative initiatives. But hopefully, our goal obviously is to grow and be able to be of help to many other players along the journey, from journalists to entrepreneurs to policymakers themselves. But actively, what we're trying to do now is to really create the intelligence that is needed, so a platform that will provide the data on the real time, with constantly updated resources. So it's different than the structure of a report, which is a bit more static. What we want to have now, it's really something that will be evergreen with, always innovative content appearing and enabling other people to understand and to grasp a bit better which are the technologies that are actually relevant for a low carbon future.
When you're meeting with clients or with people interested or during your speeches and lectures, what are the biggest misconceptions, in your opinion, about the climate tech and the climate change in general? Like, what are the biggest mistakes or misconceptions or misunderstandings maybe prejudices that you encounter, and how, if you do encounter some, how do you deal with that?
Definitely, there are quite a few. One of them is the understanding of climate change itself. I know it was supposed to be an evidence for now for everyone, but unfortunately, some people are still in denial of that reality. And so sometimes it is important to explain, like the basic understanding of why that is actually a key relevant topic for society and for everyone everywhere, not just for people living in warm regions, even though it's also important to understand that the ones who will suffer the most are actually not the ones that are contributing the most to climate. So one of the key things that I usually mention is that the limit of 2 degrees Celsius of increased temperature, which is the one that the Paris Agreement limit for us, right? All countries actually agreed upon. It's still very warm. It's still very different than what we used to have for thousands of years. And it already means a lot of suffering for many people, and extreme weather events and, a lot of changes. So it's already something that it's not the ideal world, but it's where we need to get. And in order to get there, we'll need to make a massive effort. We emit today about 51 gigatons of greenhouse gas emissions every year, and we need to get to zero by 2050. So that means halving emissions every decade and doing all that while at the same time improving the quality of life and life standards for millions of people, billions of people around the globe will not be, a small challenge. So I guess one of the first things that I usually explain to people is how massive that challenge is. And then the second thing is also for the ones that are maybe a bit more extremist and that say, well, if that's the case, then why would I even care? Because we're already in the bad scenario, right? I would use the F word here. So, we're already we are already messed up. And the truth is that the problem will happen if we do not curb emissions right now, as more people will suffer. So avoiding suffering is always best than, you know, just letting that happen. So it's not that everyone will be extinct by 2030 if we do not curb emissions now, but it is that suffering will increase massively for many, many people around the globe. And we need to make something right now in order for that not to happen. And part of the response could come from the technological or the technology sector. But again, it's just part of this response. And we also need at the same time to have a lot more changes coming from just normal people, behavior change, starting to consume less meat, to take more, you know, public transportation or buy an electric vehicle if they need to, instead of using fossil fuels and other things like that. So I think it's a general mindset that sometimes need to be understood. And I've been trying at my scale, let's say, to communicate about those things. But it's, yeah, and I also thank you both for giving the opportunity here as well to, you know, speak more people about that, because I think it's important for more people to hear. And that's part of the work that we've been trying to do, both with Good Tech Lab and now more recently with ClimateScape.
Well, thank you so much. And we're really happy to. This is all very inspiring. It's always much more difficult to talk about the second part that you mentioned, and that is the fact that we all will have to bear the cost of improving the climate, or at least slowing down the negative ways the climate change impacts us. And the fact that we all will have to bear the cost, that it's not some sort of, you know, government will do this and companies will do that, but everybody needs to think about how, you know, he or she can limit their way of lives, which is tough, you know, it's tough.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. I guess the most important thing is just not to let that daunting challenge in front of us stop us from taking action, right? It's interesting because I was seeing recently, earlier this year, the publication from the World Economic Forum about the global risks, and climate action failure was listed among the most probable scenarios, as well as one of the most impactful. It was just close to infectious diseases, which in a year of COVID, I think we can all relate to how big a COVID situation with infectious diseases actually transformed the world upside down. And so would climate action failure, right? But we cannot let that happen. Like we cannot fail on our actions around climate. So we need to all really make a change at all scales that we can act. So if you are a policymaking, then, you know, do your actions, create better policies, and make sure that we do have a better way to account for carbon emissions, and that have taxes that, you know, limit our behavior in that direction. If you're a business leader, you also need to change how you're conceiving your business and have something else rather than just the bottom line, the financial bottom line of your company, but also include other perspectives and understand how that would be even risky for all your supply chain and, you know, for your capacity to actually sell. If you are in a crisis, like, you won't have a way to actually keep selling whatever you were selling today. So it's just an interesting part of every business to understand and integrate climate change into their mission and core action. And if you're an entrepreneur, then obviously, like, don't spend your time doing stupid things or just developing a new app for anything that, you know, won't be actually benefiting society, but just creating more harm. It's just like really focusing on problems that matter and directing your energies towards problems that are important.
It must take a lot of energy to stay positive, you know, you know, because the reason why I'm saying that is that I can see a lot of people just being tired about talking about the climate change and you know, that it's just, you know, the same old. And, you know, it's just nice to see that there is this energy for change.
My question is around, because I know you work a lot with startups and you talk about sustainability within that. So within their potential to rise, how do you incentivize them to be sustainable? Because it's such a competitive market for startups and for any kind of entrepreneurship, where being sustainable is so costly, and it can even cost you to rise against other startups. How do you incentivize them, or how would you say that they should be incentivized to be more sustainable?
I think that's a very interesting question. Maybe the only point where I might slightly disagree is that it is costly to be more sustainable. I think that might be the case, or that might have been the case before, but more and more what I see is that by being sustainable and by being diverse, by the way, you have even more chances of, you know, succeeding, because just your business has actually just better chances of being relevant in a 2020 scenario and in future. So designing your business, taking sustainability into account, is not so much of a compromising, but rather like future-proof sort of strategy, at least from my perspective. And I'm happy to see more entrepreneurs also kind of adopting that type of view. Obviously, in certain areas, that might be a bit more difficult to navigate. And one of the things that could potentially be done is, you know, create the right incentives for entrepreneurs to evaluate their impact, don't have to compromise for, you know, fast growth, and being able to really develop a business that doesn't need to cope with a winner-take-all model, but that, you know, can survive and thrive in a more cooperative economy. So I think there probably are some interesting incentives to be put into place. Interestingly, the more we see investors actually being knowledgeable, but maybe like understanding this reality that you don't need to actually compromise on our financial returns to get positive impact. So by that fact, you'd actually allow more startups to just communicate on their impact more concretely. And more you also see even infrastructure, like juridical status, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but the incorporation of companies that actually have that into their core mission. And you'd have that for in the US, for instance, public benefit corporations. I know that here in France, you'd also have kind of a hybrid form of company, which is like the entreprise à mission, where, you know, the mission statement it's clear and you're kind of accountable for that. And I think it's interesting to see more and more those types of policy innovations happening to allow for more of that. And also from the investment perspective, like understanding more that one thing doesn't mean necessarily like it's not a zero-sum game. You can actually have both. You can have and interesting returns and, you know, better impact for society.
I'm actually really happy to have been corrected on that. it's for us, it's extremely valuable to have guests that can talk specifically about why it's not hindering to be sustainable and giving specific examples, because this is, I think, exactly what these kinds of arguments are, exactly what will really pass through and people will really hear, because it's not just saying that sustainability is good, it's giving concrete examples and proving that it's not damaging to your company. So thank you for saying that. Moving slightly more into like a general topic about technology, I wanted to know, because this is something that we follow a lot and it's been fascinating for us to try and understand how it comes about and how we can make it more factual. But my question is, where for you is the balance between negative challenges around using technology and promoting that use and the positive opportunities of using and promoting technology? So this is in light of the deepening and many times misleading or misinformed narrative and conversation around technology. The people out there that are afraid of technology and are sort of trying to make the narrative more disruptive in a bad sense, and the people out there that are promoting technology as a really good way of doing things.
There's something in between, right? We should not be naive and techno-solutionism, like believe that, you know, with just one line of code, you could actually solve all the world's problems. That's not going to happen. But at the same time, just being afraid of it and, you know, isolating yourself from natural evolution of society, which also includes, you know, improving the means that we have to do the things that we want to do. And, you know, technology has been evolving since forever. And, you know, we initially have basic tools, those continue to evolve. And I see no reason why we would just stop that evolution from happening. So I think the key let's say, the key issue that probably policymakers need to face now is how to create a governance for a technology that allows it to be balanced, right? So to, on the one hand, enable the potential of technology to progress and to benefit humanity, while on the other hand, protecting society against its critical risks and challenges. So it's not super easy as a balance to find, but one of the things that could help is also enabling the society to make their collective choices and informed collective choices. And by that, we would need to educate the population a bit more on, you know, for instance, the platforms that we're using. There's been so much debate now about the privacy or the data that's being collected. And I think that's super important. I think the only way to actually make this and the ones that are responsible for the technology being developed accountable for them is to communicate, is to have people really understand what's happening right behind the scenes. So that on the one hand, you would reduce the fear because people fear what they don't understand, and reducing the misunderstanding would also reduce the fear, but would also increase the accountability for those players, which are, you know, today sometimes just doing what they want, and prevent the risks for like a small group of people, individuals, enterprises, or, you know, even government making decision in the name of the whole world. And especially when you talk about climate, there are some, let's say, potential solutions for the climate crisis problem, which is super controversial. And I don't think that any individual alone could be capable of taking decisions of that size and of that, you know, impact by themselves. So creating the infrastructure necessary to build the dialogue and create consensus around those things is super important.
I have one last question before our sort of wrap-up question. So in terms of international cooperation on tech governance and tech global governance, who do you think is the most uncooperative actor in these conversations? So, for example, if we took into consideration the UN panel on digital cooperation, the UNESCO, I think it's a group on ethics in AI, there's also an OECD similar initiative. Do you have any experience where you know who is the most uncooperative, I would say, sector or person, whoever's representing that sector in those conversations?
No, but personally, I wouldn't have a personal experience with it. But what I can say to that matter, though, it's unfortunate for us, but you would find lack of cooperation, I guess, at all levels from governments who, you know, sometimes compete to whom should be developing technology X or Z and should or not import X or Z technology, to, you know, companies that declare or not if they're cooperating among themselves and sometimes protect what they're doing to the extent of not enabling people to repair the products that they buy because it's like they are just so concerned with their own market that they prevent, you know, even better benefits for society just because they want to be too protective. But I guess what's probably the even more sometimes daunting challenge is that even among the more progressive actors that are actually creating the solutions for many of the global problems that we're facing, you still find a lack of cooperation. Like it happened to me recently still that, you know, players who are developing interesting communities around climate tech and who are super vocal about those issues, because there's still this type of knowledge which is kind of forced upon us by the economy, that many of the sectors would still need to be a winner-take-all type of approach. Sometimes you just by that enforce a lack of cooperation among people and kind of nurture some type of competition and the fear that whatever you're doing might create, yeah, just a competition to your own solution. And that because funding is also limited, right? The challenge becomes bigger and some people are just less open for exchanging and learning from each other just because it's super hard to actually get the funding needed for developing their own solution. So unfortunately, I would say the lack of cooperation would be found in all levels, from the individual one to even within the social innovation and like climate tech movement, beyond like the traditional large corporation groups and bigger or nation states or, you know, international players as well.
What is there for you now in the coming weeks and months? What are the biggest steps or projects or things to do? What are you looking forward to what or on the other hand, what keeps you awake at night?
I guess climate crisis and consistent social inequality still keep me awake at night for a good reason. I want to find some solutions for that problem. Definitely not the only one, because there won't be one solution to that. But hopefully there will be many. What is up for the next weeks, let's say, or months, and hopefully in years to come, is the development of ClimateScape. And we just announced recently the opening of this new platform, which will be like the pro version of current Open Directory, where we will provide a lot more data with a deep sectoral analysis, starting with something in EV batteries, and hopefully getting many other topics over the next weeks and months to come.
And last question, which we also ask every guest. So the question is, if you can design tomorrow's front page global headlines, what would they say or ask? And this isn't to say, what do you want to suddenly magically happen, like, you know, end of COVID or cooperation or social equality, but what is it that you want people to open their newspapers and read? What is it that you want them to think about? What kind of phrasing or questions or topics you think are missing from the newspapers or the way they're put?
I'm not sure I can create a catchy headline for that, but
we can leave that to the marketing team later.
Fantastic. Let's say in terms of the news of the day, I would hope to see something about the fact that for current, like today's society, it's no longer a matter of you're either focusing on financial returns or a matter of you're creating some positive good for society. Like that debate is past. And I think I would like to see that as old news and you know, having as a good news, something like you just can no longer do business as usual, and integrating all climate concerns into your business is like the news of the day. And that's what should be every day in every media, so everyone actually digests and understand that.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we'll hear from Joachim Bitterlich, a legend on the European sphere, former European diplomatic and security advisor to Chancellor Helmut Kohl of Germany, and more recently a member of JEDI, Joint European Disruption Initiative, and advisor at Berlin Global Advisors. Until then, have a great day.